Peace, everyone. Welcome, welcome to True Health Live. Welcome to our season premiere. If you're catching us live, peace. If not, it's nice to know that you're listening on the back end and one of the many program podcast platforms that we're on. I'm like getting tongue twisted, tongue tied, or, you know, checking out the video afterwards. So we have a great lineup for you this season. We are starting out with Black mental health. But before we get into that, I'd like to introduce and reintroduce us. Like, we haven't been around for a while and a whole lot of stuff has happened while we have been away. But we're still here. We're alive and we're alive and well, and we've been blessed and we're thankful for that. So I am your co-host, Yafe.
Hi, everybody. I'm Anushka. I'm so happy to be back and to chat with you all.
And then we're also joined by a guest, Adobe, and she is a UNC Chapel Hill undergraduate student in the pre-med major. And Adobe and I met a few strongs ago, I think it was February, right? So yeah. She actually was a speaker at the Minority Health Conference that UNC has every year, and it was a new thing for her. And she led a session on vulnerability and the mental health of this strong Black woman. And it has a specific title, which she'll get into later. But I thought it was really interesting because of the word deteriorating and that word mental health deteriorating and vulnerability, like, really standing out. So I'm going to let Adobe, like, you know, kind of speak and introduce herself and tell us a little bit more about her presentation that she did based on her research and, like, why she came to that. The floor is yours, boo.
Hello, everyone. So as she already said, my name is Adobe. I'm a first year at UNC and I'm a pre-med student. My interest aligns in the areas of public health, mental health, neuroscience. So as you can see, like, it kind of like delves into medicine and then the social aspect of medicine, like why we need to like take care of ourselves and like what we need to do both like scientifically and culturally and socially. I heard about the Minority Health Conference through Instagram and the Gillings website, and I found it really interesting because I always wanted to like delve into the work of advocacy, and I thought, what better place to start than like right now? And I think what made me really nervous about it was because, like, I've done stuff like this, like speaking and writing essays, but I've never really connected it to like something I'm like passionate about, like health. And I've never done it like to a group of like as many people as I did last time, to a conference like this significant and to a school like this. So it was really different for me. And I think when I was like trying to choose a topic, the reason why I connected this topic because it felt like something I could relate to. It felt like something that I needed to do more research on, something I still need to do more research on right now because, like, it's an abstract concept and it's something that I feel like I need to learn more about for myself and for my community. So that's a little bit about me.
Oh, good. Thanks. Welcome. I think I saw somebody pop up in the chat. Peace, Anu Radio. Peace, Master Manulek. Peace, House of Manulek. That's nice that you're here. Give thanks. It was really interesting because I'll be honest, like, I attended this session because I was like, oh, you know, I have a different outlook than many of my peers on, you know, the strong Black woman. Like, one being that I used to hold that dear, right? You know, that I'm a strong Black woman. And then, you know, then coming to the understanding, not on my own, but like through that of my mate, like telling me, like, no, that's a fallacy. You know, you're not actually doing it on your own. And the truth is, like, if we're moving correctly, like, we don't have to do it on our own. It doesn't mean that you're, you know, be lazy and just rely on a man and do everything for you. But it is, you know, kind of moving into that vulnerable space. And again, like, that's the thing that, you know, made me want to reach out to you because just in the moment, there were some, you know, crazy tech things going on and you were like really, really nervous. You're like, I'm just standing here and I'm really nervous and I'm telling you guys this because I'm practicing vulnerability. And I was like, that is so sweet because how, and even to watch you being older than you and like thinking like, I don't think I would ever have done that, have said that, because I would always move, and still sometimes too, if I was be like moving this, like, I got it, everything's under control. And you were, and I actually thought that that was much stronger of you to even say, like, I'm moving in a space of vulnerability and I'm nervous, mm-hmm. but I'm working through it, and I'm just telling you guys what's happening with me right now. So I thought mm-hmm. that was amazing.
Thank you for your comment. I think that, like, now that, like, I'm in university and, like, doing stuff, like, not only getting an education, but trying to explore myself and, like, you know, educate myself more, I feel that going into this research topic about mental health and Black women mental health, I did it because I wanted to learn, just to learn and just to, like, be able to, like, interpret and, like, articulate information outside there. However, I feel like during the process of learning and also, like, during the moment of the conference, like, the moment alone, I feel like I had, like, a growth experience, because for, like, you know how we learn something in school and then we learn it just to take a test? I feel like I learned something to, like, live life. And I didn't know what to, like, because questions were, like, it scares me because I don't know what to say. It's not something that I practice, like, my speech. But I just, like, thought that if I'm going to give a speech about being honest, I might as well be honest. And I feel like that was, like, the right thing to do at the moment. And learning about how, like, we shouldn't, like, feel like we need to be strong kind of helped me to kind of take control of the situation. I don't think I did it, like, to control professionally, but it was my first time, and I didn't know, like, how to react. And I just knew that, like, well, I didn't expect there to be, like, technical difficulties. And, like, the video that was supposed to show, or that did show, is, like, supposed to be a huge part of the my speech. So having it not show was, like, something I was like, oh, it cannot happen. But I was just standing there, and I was, like, having faith. And, like, that's when I was like, oh, vulnerability. Like, I need you guys to know what's going through my mind, because I didn't know how anyone else thought that I react. I don't know if they thought it was professional, but I wanted them to know that, like, no matter how they thought I handled it, it was just the way that it was convenient for me at the moment. And I think that's, like, how we need to live. Like, we don't need to necessarily explain ourselves to people, but we need to, like, explain our thoughts or our feelings. We don't need to say why we did it, but we need to say, like, what caused us to do it, if that makes sense.
That's, I love that. Like, it's the pressure, right? You took the pressure off of yourself and you just embraced that vulnerability. So that's, I wasn't present, but I heard a lot about the conference and a lot of great things and how you carried yourself. So I'm so proud of you. It takes bravery to admit, you know, you're in your vulnerable space. So that, I applaud you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think something you said, like, you know, like, being able to explain, like, our thoughts and feelings. I think when we do look at that, because how many of us have trouble with that? Like, I myself have trouble with that, like, really reconciling, like, okay, what's the feeling? And you have to, like, go deeper, because then that brings on, like, you know, the emotion, but then, like, what are the thoughts that are really behind everything? Mm-hmm. So I think once you do that, like you said, you know, really be able to explain that, then you can kind of explain, like, why you did something, because we have, like you said, like, thinking about, like, being abstract. So, like, how do we, if it's, like, when you're moving with another person, which you were, like, you had, like, an audience full of people, but then you explained what was going on. So you kind of did do that. Like, this is why this is happening. I'm looking this way, or I'm saying these things because I'm nervous. Like, you know, so you actually did, and it happens in a more organic way. And that way it's not like, well, I'm standing here feeling like I have to explain, but it's more like, if I'm being honest with myself and what's happening, then I can, like, you know, speak and be mature. And yeah. I think many of us are, like, and myself, and when I say, I'm talking about me, still learning how to do that. Peace, Margie Marie R. Thank you for joining us. Greetings, everyone. And as always, like, feel free to jump in and ask questions. I did have a question about, like, you know, more about exploring the vulnerability, but I wanted you to, like, share a little bit more about your research that you're doing, so that it could give the conversation a little bit more context, because this is, like, the first in a series. Like, Anushka and I were talking, like, okay, we could do, like, a whole series on Black mental health. So tonight's episode, we're focusing on women, but this is you know, not at all the only conversation. This is just, like, a piece of, you know, what we can talk about when it comes to Black mental health. We're going to get into children and racism, how that affects them. We're going to get into the men and even more about women. But you know, being that you were, you know, very like kind of green and like fresh, it was like, let's talk to this young sister and like, you know, see like the differences, which we talked about, you and I, like, you know, the generational differences and like even how we think and how we express ourselves. So like, give us a little bit more about like your research and like why you did it, you know, and exploring like that vulnerable space.
Okay. So, my research, it was like the topic for the conference thing was about stress and the social determinants of stress. So my two options that I was leaning towards were things that like I've heard about or I'm familiar with. The first option that I thought of that came to mind was on mental health in Nigeria, which is where I'm from. And the thing about, I was asking my mom, like, because I just like, it just came up to me in my mind. And I told her that idea. And she was like first hesitant and then she liked it. And I was like wondering why she was hesitant about it. So then I told her my next idea and I was like, strong Black woman. And I don't know where I've heard it from. I thought that I just made it up at the moment, the phrase, but then I looked it up. I was like, oh, okay, this is good. It has like a lot of research on it. So, and then I told her the other one, like the strong Black woman stereotype. And then she liked that one a lot more. And I was like, oh, like, cause you know, when like you have an option, they're like, okay, that's good. And then you give another option. Like, oh, they're like, oh yeah, that's it. That was my mom. So I was like, oh, why do you like that option more? And she was like, well, the first option just wasn't it. Because the thing about mental health in Nigeria is that it's kind of non-existent. Like we think mental health in America is bad, but in Nigeria, there's not really a space to talk about it, nor there is like resources. And we still lack in America, especially for people of minority, like Black women, but it's just way worse in my country. So I was like, okay, I will explore the strong Black woman syndrome more. And then when I was reading about it, everything like I read, like different like stories, I felt like I related to it or someone else in my life related to it. Or like even my mom, like I felt like she related to it so much. And that's why like I gave like the description about it, trying to find it.
From the conference?
Yeah, I gave a description about like who the strong Black woman is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like while you look for it, I remember like reading it and I was like, oh, like, yeah, this is like myth busting, like, you know, and the way that I took it, I was like, yeah, because there is no such thing, because if you're moving within someone's system, like you're not actually the strong one, like you're actually like kind of moving through the system. So then what is it? And then I was curious to see like what other attendees would like, you know, go in. And you and I had a conversation about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Clear difference between those who were like, I don't know, I would say like 40 and up versus the students in the room. Like, you know, it was very, it was just a clear difference. Like I saw that like the younger generation was very like, well, this was what I actually experienced and not really pulling in this, like, it's everybody's fault. And, you know, and this is not to say that some experiences or, you know, different perspectives that we might have or like things that happen to us, like this is what happened and this is how I perceived it. You know, that's not to discount or discredit any of that. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it was like, there seemed to be like this, if one comment is made about like how we're victimized, everybody kind of jumped on it. And it's just like, that's not the case all the time. And there has to be like a level of honesty, you know, can't just be. And then, and you actually like responded to one of the questions. Oh, we have a thunderstorm. I don't know if y'all heard that, but the sky literally just opened up. But you know, there has to be like a level of honesty when we're talking about, and also like, really like clear visions and like discernment when we're talking about our experiences and not always looking at things through like a victim lens. And so, yeah, but did you find what you're looking for?
Yeah, I found what I was looking for. Yeah. Okay. The victim mindset. Yeah. Something that we should definitely get into later in this interview. But yeah, so the whole point of my research was to, like, foster an understanding of what what the Black strong Black woman syndrome in. And what I came up with is I aim to foster a deeper understanding of how misleading the word strong can be. Although it might first come as a compliment to people towards Black women, it can be a way for society to say that as a strong Black woman, you have to overcome so many obstacles, but it's also a way for them to add, since you have endured so many obstacles, why not endure more? Why not tolerate more? Why ask for help now when you have been independent all your life? And I wanted to explain through my research that though the strong Black woman is thought of as a hero, they can be the older sister, the everyday being, the daughter of immigrant parents, the first generation college student, the single mother, the tolerating wife, the highly educated, and the woman that you walk past every day on the street or on campus. So the strong Black woman is literally anyone that you can think of. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that we're all going through things that no one else knows and no one can see. But because we are the color that we are, the gender that we are expected to be stronger. Men are expected to be stronger in physical ways, and we're expected to be stronger in, like, maternally, or like have a mindset that's different, and that could affect us. But then when we are not only women, but we're women of color, then we have to struggle with this type of intersectionality that makes us kind of like invulnerable, and we have to like find, like, we have to find a struggle, but we don't know what to do. Like, we don't know how to, like, we don't know how to attempt finding help. And because of the way society is constructed, we don't know how to get help either. And whenever we do try to get help, we're told that, oh, well, don't we already have help? Don't we already have ourselves? Because we are too busy helping other people, we forget to help ourselves. Mm.
That was so well said.
Thank you.
Like, you touched on so many things. I think the expectation of Black women, women of color, is the bar is just so high. And like you said, when we are being vulnerable and we are looking to get support, whether it be, you know, in our homes or just in our community, it's looked upon as, well, like you said, aren't you already strong? Like, you've been doing so much so for so long. The expectation is that you continue. And I love the fact that you're standing in it saying that's not necessarily true, right?
Yes.
But I think you had something to add to it as well. Deidre?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know me, like, we're, and I always say this, and I've said this to both of them, like, we're not always going to agree. So I think that, well, there's a good piece of that that I don't know if it's a good piece, but, like, there's pieces of that I think are, that I would agree with, right? But then I would ask the question, it's like, if we're not being supported, like, how much of that, it's accountability. That's where I want to go. Mm-hmm. Like, what are the pieces that we have to be accountable for? So if we're not being supported, like, is it because, and I have the answer that I take in my head based on, like, how I live and move. But I would ask, like, is it because, like, there's this generational, like, and this passing down of, this is how you're supposed to be, this is how you're supposed to act, and not once ever kind of moving into something different, like being vulnerable, or like even being feminine. And also, like, what's that missing piece? Because, like, if we're talking about the strong Black woman, the woman, we're supposed to have a counterpart. So where is the man in that piece? And if we move in a space where the man is present, does all of that crazy happen in our lives? And for me, I think no. And I've also experienced both, and it being understanding that when we're moving in that space where you have that counterpart and you're moving, you know, appropriately, then we don't have to be that. We can be more vulnerable. We can be more feminine. But it's the, and I think we talked about this earlier in this, but, like, you have to unlearn mm-hmm. certain behaviors and, like, move mm-hmm. into that space. And the unfortunate part is, like, many of our sisters, like, will not unlearn it. And then they kind of stay stuck in that, like, well, I'm doing this and I don't feel supported. And I'm like, da-da-da-da. But then it's like, how do we get that message to them about, like, you have to change your entire way of thinking? It's not just you. We're supposed to be mated. We're supposed to be moving as a unit, like, as a family. So that was
I think this topic too is just, it's so layered, right? So there's so many layers we have to peel back, so many things that we can, you know, address and just go more in depth with. And I do agree, like, some things we do have to unlearn, and it's hard. Everyone's learning and unlearning is very different. And it's, it's the same. It's a concept too. Like as you get older, it's harder to change your ways, right? So for someone younger where their minds are like absorbing things like a sponge, it's easier to teach, right? It's easier to teach and lead, and they have more opinions and can develop themselves. Whereas if you're older, it's like you've been doing this for so many decades and years that it's like, this is who I am. So how can I? It can be challenging. Not to say that it's not doable, because it definitely is. And I think it all goes back to the personal preferences and for that person and individual. Like, it's like when you're fed up of being fed up, like I'm tired. Like I always say, I'm done with being a superwoman. I want to retire this S and just be a woman, right? I don't want the S on my chest anymore, because all those boxes that Adobe, you mentioned at the beginning of what can define a Black woman, right? I check off all of that, right? A single mom, being independent since I was younger, a child of immigrant parents, first generation, all those things. And so for me, it's been independence from childhood, being the big sister, before I had my daughter, I had my younger sister. And so it was like being like, it's a second mommy or the bonus mom when my mom was working and so on and so forth. So it's having this strength in you, not only from the people you look up to and not in like your guardians, but then also in self, because it's like, I have to be responsible, right? And I think a lot of us who are from other countries and migrate here, like it's just instilled in us culturally, like family, being family oriented, making sure, especially if you're one of the oldest, I am the eldest for my parents. And so it's like, you know, you got to lead, you have to set the example. So therefore you have to be strong. If we're not around, then you're the go-to person, right? You're the next person. And so that was a lot of pressure for me coming up. So I've always had to be strong. I was my mom's best friend, her right and left hand, right? Same with my sister, same for myself. And now being a mom, and I'm close to 40 as well, what my strength, the strong me looked like when I was a teenager is very different now, because I also had time to grow. And again, I am also educated in not just, you know, book smart, but worldly things, right? Our real life, day-to-day living experience. So I have been able to navigate in a way that can help me be a better me for me, but then also for my family, right? And so I can kind of, I still battle with the strength piece, right? When to be strong, when to be vulnerable. And Deidre and I were talking about this before. And, you know, a lot of times I realized that in my own experience, like with my daughter, for example, and I've told her this, I've raised her to be strong from a place of my own experience and to be independent, to be able to stand on her own 2 feet, because I want to see her be successful for herself and be able to thrive in this world, you know, God forbid, when I'm no longer here. But in the midst of that, I forgot vulnerability. Because now I hear her talking, right? Now she's talking. She's about to be 20 in a few months. And she's talking to me, having conversations. And I'm like, I hear the strength, but I don't hear the vulnerability. And I don't see the vulnerable side of her either. So now at this 19 years have gone by, and I'm looking at an almost 20-year-old, I'm still working with her because I realized where my flaws were, right? And sometimes for the next generation, our experience, we carry them with us. And sometimes as we raise our children, we raise them from a place of pain. And at one point, that was it. I was raising her to be strong from my place of pain because I wanted to protect her from it and I wanted her to be well-equipped. So I think unlearning certain things, like we do it, for me, I want to unlearn some things so I can be a better person and in turn also be a better mom and lead by example so that my daughter does not carry on, right? So she doesn't carry on my flaws, and then the cycle does not continue, so that she can embrace that vulnerability and know that, you know, it's good to be a strong woman, be strong for yourself, but that does not mean you carry the burden. You don't have to carry the burden. You don't have to put the pressure of society or anybody on you, right? You can say no, right? No is like a full sentence. You can say no, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that, or, you know, and have healthy, strong boundaries and honor your boundaries, because if you don't honor them, then who else will, right? So that in itself is strength, but that's pouring. That's you kind of turning the tables and pouring back into yourself and uplifting and empowering yourself.
Yeah, I really like what you said. Throughout both of what you said, like I kind of like picked up on like three significant words, and those are learn, unlearn, and education. And I feel like they, two of them at least, contradict each other, learn and unlearn. And then learn and education can be like a simile for, or what is it called, a synonym for both of each other. But the thing between, the difference between the younger generation, older generation, is definitely how we learn. The younger generation, and you can see the education system, like the younger generation, like to get into college now, they're looking for a holistic process. They want a holistic person, someone who's willing to be able to not only pass the ACT or pass your standardized test or whatever test you have to take and get good grades, but also someone who's able to write a good essay with thought, show that you're a human being, you know, get out there and volunteer, be a person, be in your community. However, whereas back in the day, the older generations, to get into schools, what they had to do was take a test, get good grades. And that was the main part, because not many people could do that. But now we're more developed human beings and we can do that. So I think that, and just in a way, like I have to explain things to my parents, like I can't tell them, oh, you have to let me take this extracurricular because I want to play tennis. Like I can't tell them that. I have to tell them, oh, well, playing tennis will help me, you know, help me make new friends and help me, you know, become a better team player and also help me become stronger and I can, like, fight boys or whatever. I have to, like, change my words for them to understand. And that's a way for, I think, like, the only way to unlearn is by looking at what you produced and asking yourself, do I like it? Mm-hmm. The answer can be yes, but does it concern me? And I feel like the answer as a parent can always be, well, it's not like, it's always going to be yes for both of them, because you might like what you produce. Like they might like that I'm strong and I'm smart, but then they might not like some of the things that come out of my mouth. They might not like the way I view things. They might question themselves, oh, why is she acting this way? Or why is she not, like, when I yell at her, why is she not showing emotions? And then they have to think about what they did and how they raised me. Well, because I didn't let her show emotions when I was growing up. So in order to unlearn, you have to be able to look at what you produce, look at what you put out into the world and ask yourself, does it reflect what you want, who you are? And then as the younger generation, we have to look at them with understanding. We can't yell at our parents. We can't be mad at them. We can't yell at older generations and be mad at them for not having the same views as us. We have to be able to explain to them in different ways, use different key terms, find ways that we can both find a common ground. Mm-hmm. And also, like, I think that, like, also, like, what you said about the men in our lives, I think that's really important, because, like, my dad, he is a big part of me and who I am as a person. He's a big part of my mindset, and, like, maybe it's the destructive part of the mindset where I have to be strong, but also, I feel like both of my parents play an equal part of that, because this world is not easy, and, like, as women, like, we just have to keep on fighting. But the way they raised me, I know that I have to do whatever I can do to survive. But then from the world, I learned that sometimes you need to take a break for yourselves. And also, I feel like even though they're the older generation to me, I'm the older generation to my sisters. So I was unable to unlearn this, like whatever mindset that was put on me, by looking at them and asking, oh, is this like what I want? Like I look at my sister and I'm like, you're really smart, but should you be crying over a B? Like, I'm concerned about this. And, like, should you be saying, oh, well, you don't think you're good enough? But that's what I was saying. And now that I see what I produced, it's my turn to change it. So we just have to, like, see what we produce and change it. I think that's what the solution is, or part of the solution is, because there's not, like, one direct solution.
No, I love that. And I love that you pointed that out, because and that helps me, like, yeah, I'm on the right path, because I do that. It takes a lot to reflect on yourself. It's like looking in the mirror to say, okay, like, now I got to be honest with myself. And me as a mom, I always think back to how I was raised, right? But I parent very different than where my parents parented me and how my mom parented. And so as I always like to say, because my daughter and I kind of grew up together, we're 20 years apart. And so as she grew, so did I. So my parenting always adjusted because it needed to, right? I had to be more understanding and I had to understand where she was coming from so I could still be her mom, but also not pushing my beliefs so much onto her, still instilling values and morals, but holding a safe space so she can explore her point of views and express them, right? Because we always tell our kids, like, you know, you don't talk back, you don't do this, you don't that. I always tell her, you be respectful and you can express yourself, but in a respectful way. Because I never want to hinder her from being expressive, because I know she's going to grow into a young woman. And at that point, it's like, no, girl, express yourself. So how dare I try to quiet you when you're small and then expect you to be boisterous when you're older, right? Mm-hmm. So from what you said, yes, we have to be able to have those bi-directional conversations, mm-hmm. and we have to be able to ask ourselves, well, yeah, like, do I really agree with that? And just think back. And sometimes, you know, there is no shame in saying, you know what, I messed up. Like, that was wrong. Like, I practice apologizing when I'm wrong, especially with my kid, because at the end of the day, even if they're children, like, we're all children. We have feelings. We're still human beings. And a lot of time, you know, I'm a proud Indo-Afro-Caribbean woman. And in our culture, it's just like, shut your mouth, right? You don't speak up. You don't, even if you're right and the elder is wrong, you just take it. You let them speak. Yeah. I wanted to change that narrative in my household, not through disrespect and not through being, you know, rambunctious or rebellious or whatnot, but having right, just having those healthy conversations where I'm respecting you as a human being and you're respecting me as a human being, and nonetheless, like, I'm your mom, right? I'm your parent, and no matter what, I got your back. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Let's talk about it. Because only in those healthy conversations will you then lay the foundation to have open conversations with the next generation, where there is trust and safe, and they feel safe, right? Not just physically, but emotionally and mentally. Yeah. And that, you know what I mean? And I think that helps changing the narrative. That also helps when it comes to unlearning, because again, as I said, we grew together. So some things I did have to unlearn because I wanted better for her. And some traumas I wanted to end with me. I did not want it to cross into the next generation. So I had to work on mine. Like, I honored generations before me, but I knew certain things had to end here, right? They would not cross over onto further generations. And so, you know, for me personally, I didn't just throw things away. I dealt with them, right? I faced whatever I needed to face, and I'm still facing some things, and just healing for me. Like, I'm just healing and making sure that I don't hand that down.
Right. There were two things that both of you said. I'm like, well, they kind of go together. And it's that idea of, like, it made me think of, because there's some questions in the chat, so I want to get to them. But it did make me think of, like, when you talked about your family, Adobe, and it's like, you know, outside of it, because there's, like you said, Anushka, this is very layered. So there is that, you know, dynamic between elder and junior or senior and junior, right? And, like, breaking those curses and knowing, like, how to discern when you have to break away and evolve, because we're here to evolve. But then there's that other piece, like, when you talked about, like, your family, it's like, well, when we're moving in those families and communities, like, and we're moving properly, like, that does give us the space to be, like, to be in our feminine selves if we're not moving in that generation. First wave, we're not passing down those just kind of crazy ways or the things we have to unlearn, you know, if we're not continuously passing them down, but rather showing our girls, our daughters, our younger sisters, like, you know, this is what it means to be in a family. This is what it means to be in a household, because then you can be, you understand what it is to be vulnerable, and you can be, because you're protected. You're not out in the world, you know, because so that's where, like, I also, like, you know, I deviate from you guys. It's like that out in the world thing. Like, I realized, like, that's where I went wrong. Even that's where my parents went wrong with me. It's like, it's not like just go send her, you know, so because there's that idea, like, I should be doing it by myself. I shouldn't, you know, there wasn't the expectation of a mate, you know, mm-hmm. and so that's kind of what it boils down to. And then it's just like perpetual singlehood. So, like, and then I got to be strong. I got to do it for myself. That mentality kind of, like, sets into, like, this replay and goes over and over and over again. So, like, what I just kind of went to that space as you guys were talking and wanted to, like, share, like, that point of view.
I like that, because like we discussed before, I literally, when I say I embrace that strong, being that strong woman, and I got this, I got it. I don't need, you know, it wasn't a choice. It was my circumstance. So I had, there was no way to twist and turn. I had to be strong, right? I had to carry the torch. And it was just always, I was so accustomed to being the one to do it all and lead that I, for my male counterpart to come in, a partner to come in, you would have to show me and prove to me that you can carry that torch, right? I have to, therefore it has to be trust. Because without trust, how can I? I have to trust that I'm going to be okay, that you're going to handle, you're going to have care, like tender loving care with my soul, right? Because I'm trusting you to come in. And for me, it was always, well, I have a child that I need to think about. So it won't be just any old person that I give access to. As I got older, and as I said, I want to retire that S off my chest. So I'm just like, nope. I just want to be a woman. I want to embrace my soft side and be, you know, all feminine, where I don't have to be every single thing and wear all these hats. Like, I'm tired, right? I'm tired. So yeah. I just was like,
I was going to say, like, we can wear the mini hats, but the mini hats fall within that feminine role. We just don't take on those masculine hat roles, and that's where that
comes from. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I had no choice. I had to wear all of them, feminine, masculine, whatever it was. I got it. That was my attitude for years, all through my 20s, 30s. Now I'm approaching 40, and it's just like, no. Now I see and value and like. It's a pro and a con to, you know, like due to circumstances, like, yes, I was a single mom. However, I always stressed the importance of family. And we always had male figures, like older male figures in our family. So I stressed the importance of having a family with, like, to my daughter, because it doesn't have to always be a single parent household, right? And we don't have to relive, you know, our parents'. Situation or our grandparents or however, you know, the dynamic is. But I think you come to a place in your life where you realize companionship is amazing. You know, you don't have to go through life alone. God did not make us. And I apologize. I'm very spiritual and I believe in God and, you know, and I'm strong. That part, I am strong when it comes to my faith, right? We're not meant to live a life just by ourselves, right? We're meant to share in our joys, even share in our sadness and our sorrows, because we can uplift one another and we fill where the other one may lack, we can fulfill. And it's really a partnership, a life partnership. And I treasure that so much. And it means so much to me. And I emulate that for my daughter too, because, you know, you're going to go through different stages in life and there's going to be some times where you're going to be strong. And you're going to have to be, you know, stronger than you expect. But again, having those healthy conversations will help her navigate what strong looks like for her, right? Mm-hmm. Not what strong look like for me, but what strong looks like for her and how she can, you know, attain and thrive as herself, or as her own young self. And then also thinking ahead for her future, like, what does her family look like and what is it that she wants? And it always comes back to self, because your morals and your values and the standards that you have for yourself and what you put, how do I say, the self-love, right? Mm-hmm. How much you love yourself. If you have self-love, then you will give yourself everything that you would want someone else to give you. So when someone else like pours into you and whatnot, it's not like, oh my God, I got this. It's no, that's a bonus, because I already give it to me, right? Mm-hmm. I'm giving it to myself. So therefore, I don't have to be, you know, so hyped. I'm appreciative, but I'm not, you know, hyped, because this is a bonus and it's already exists in my life.
I think your response, like, is very important, because, like, having those conversations with your daughter just shows, like, how much, like, you've grown for yourself and for her. And it kind of reminds me of, like, when I was doing my research, like, I conducted an interview study, and one of the questions I asked was something along the lines of if the strong Black woman stereotype plays a role in intergenerational trauma. And the responses I got was like, hurt people. And that was like her talking about her mom and how she feels as if like the way that her mom was hurt before in her life, in her childhood, you know, hurt her. And it's not intentionally, but it's just what happened. And then another thing was, like, when they're trying to find solutions, like when I was asking questions about if they seek therapy or why have they not seek therapy. And some people gave, like, an answer, like, oh, a barrier for me is my family. And then what else? And someone, like, mentioned something very important. They're like, if you feel loved and support, or if you don't feel love and support, then you won't be able to give other people the love and support that you need or that they need in their lives. And I, that, like, kind of, like, made me, like, really open up my mind. And I know that, Yafa, you something you asked a question about, or, like, you made a statement about, like, where's the gap between vulnerability and femininity? And I think the gap is really our mindsets, because, like, the way we think, like, yes, we all have problems, and yes, especially us Black women, we have major problems. But the thing is that the world might not change our problems. Someone else might. Having a company might change our problems, but nothing's going to change until we change it ourselves, until we change our mindset. The problems are going to be there, and they might go, they might come, but the way you think about it would really, really, like, enhances or, like, diminishes it.
Yeah.
That's and very important.
Multiple avenues on how we think about it. It was a few things that came to mind, but I want to get to the chat because we left them hanging. So, peace of y'all, welcome. Welcome, Sovereign Eats. And yes, thank you. We are glad to be back. So, we have a first question from On the Radio. She says, I'm wondering, and I read the questions again for those of you who might be new listeners and listening afterwards. I read them because the show is live, but if you're listening, you don't see the questions. So, Anu Radio says, I'm wondering how much mental health is attributed to the diaspora making the journey to America and taking on a different culture. So I think that is probably a question for, well, actually, that could be a question for all of us, because technically, I mean, I haven't made the journey to America, but similar to you, Anushka, I am partly first generation. But I think most of that question is really for you, Adobe. So.
Yeah. What I'm trying to understand what the question is really asking. Like, can you read it again? The part about the
how much mental health is attributed to the diaspora making the journey to America and taking on a different culture? So, and I'm going to, if is that clear enough? I can.
Yeah, it's clear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the thing is that, like, from my journey to, like, what is it called? Nigeria to America. I don't know how much, it didn't take a lot consciously. Like, I was 4 years old, so it didn't take a lot. But I feel like it kind of manifested itself in different forms. Like, for example, I was comfortable in Nigeria, and, like, the school system there is, like, advanced. So I was already in, like, I was only four, but I was already in, like, past kindergarten. And then when I came here, I had to be, like, in kindergarten. So already, like, when you're introduced to a new school, like, when you're new, huh?
Say U.S. education system.
Yeah. So when you're, like, introduced to new school, like, as a new student, that already can be, like, a huge burden on you, because they're like, oh, this is a new student, and be nice to them. But then for me, it was something a lot more different than, like, what I've seen. It was like, this is a new student, be nice to them. They may not speak English. They're not from here. And it was just, like, different, because, like, I spoke English, but at that time, I think, like, I had an accent, and I spoke faster than my peers. So the treatment was all different. And I think the way that, like, my mannerism was, like, interpreted differently. Like, if I was to, like, say or do something, then it would be a big deal. And if they were to say or do something, then it wouldn't be a big deal. Like, for example, I remember we learned things in kindergarten, whatever. And we learned this one thing, and it was, like, the definition called oddball. And then they were like, oh, that is you, Adobe. And how I reacted to it was, I didn't like it. So I said, that's not me. I'm not an oddball. But when I, like, when the teacher heard that, what do they do? They just support it. They supported the student. And they're like, well, you are an oddball. You are foreign. But I don't think the problem wasn't that, oh, I am or I am not foreign. I am not an oddball, or whatever that is. The problem is that, like, there was no support given towards me. Like, every time there was a problem or situation, there was no support given towards me. So automatically, I was put in this place where I'm the misunderstood child, or I forgot what the term is, but I was just misunderstood and different from other people. And now, not only was I different by my skin color, but I was different socially. It was hard to make friends. So it took a lot, and like, especially because for my parents, like they put me in the private Catholic school because they wanted me to do better. They wanted me to be better, and they wanted to just like uphold a high education system, which I understand. But the thing is that if you already like you come to a new country and then you're already put in a school where you're like one of two black people, it's gonna be a lot harder. So that was when I had to like see like, am I gonna be able to change how I behave? Am I gonna be able to stop getting in trouble if I'm still here? And I could have probably, but I feel like the thing for me was to like put myself in like, because I was tired of being strong. Because me being strong then, do you know what it meant? It meant that I had to still get in trouble. I had to like put up this mean face. Like, I had to be unkind towards my classmates because they were unkind towards me. And I couldn't, like, every time I did try to show, oh, well, I feel upset, it was always like rebounded. Like, it was always like, you don't have a right to feel upset. So then what do? I cause trouble again. It's just like a recognized pattern. And I couldn't explain it at that time. And I still don't think I've explained it like fluently to my parents. They just thought I was a troublemaker when I was younger. But what I did was I told them like the night before school, I just cried in my room. I was like, I can't go back there. I can't go back there. So they moved me to public school and everything got better. Like I just found a community and I became the good kid, the straight A kid. And it's all because like your community. Yes, I got like transferred from Nigeria to America, but I also got transferred from a community where I was outcasted to a community where I am accepted. And I think that my mental health, I don't, it just like, it's a lot because when you're 4 years old, you don't even know what the term mental health means. All you know is what you've learned so far in the short span of your 4 years of life. So the way you, and like, no one cares about your mental health as a 4-year-old because they only see you as this little child who knows nothing. So anytime you behave, any way you act, they don't think, oh, it's because she has mental health problems, because she's suffering. They think, oh, it's because this child is troubled. So that's what my answer is.
Okay, thank you.
I could definitely, it's like you had to survive, right? When you were in the Catholic school. So you were coping with the treatment that you were getting, and that was your coping mechanism. Okay, well, I'm going to act out because I have to be this particular way, even though it was taking you out of character. You had to be that way in order for you to survive your day to day. And I get it, like our parents, especially our like parents who are immigrants, they have this big picture in their head, and so they're and it's only for your well-being, right? They want to do all these things to make sure that you excel, and sometimes it's hard for them to understand like what your day-to-day experience is as a youngster, right? As a young person. And again, like you said, you know, when even if you express it, it's like, what do you know? You're little. I came here when I was 5, and just like you, like I was high. I come from Guyana, and so I was already in school, and I loved school. I used to cry to go to school. So when I got here, I was actually ahead, but because of the system, I got put back according to my age. So now I had to do it all over again. I'm like, no, I can, you know. But I went directly into public school. So I had a community, my community, and I say to this day, I owe a lot of who I am and all of my interests and success because of the community that I had coming up. My teachers, my classmates, you know, every day wasn't sweet. Like, yeah. But community is a big part because if we're surrounded by folks that don't look like us, don't talk like us, don't understand how our lingo, and there's no commonality, it is hard, right? It is super hard. And like my own personal experience, like when I left New York City and I moved up to upstate New York for a little bit, my daughter was small. I had to put her into a private Catholic school just for diversity because the public school where we were at was nothing but Caucasian children, and I didn't want my daughter to be the only, literally the only child of there of color. And I'm like, she's the only black and brown person in this school, and I don't want that. And it was crazy because usually you would think the private schools or the Catholic schools have the less diversity, and it was the other way around up there. So she stayed in Catholic school until we moved back down to the city. And I know how good the diversity was when I was coming up. I know how impactful it was for me to see the people that look like me and talk like me and people who I can relate to and have friends who understood me and be understood, like, we culturally, right? So not only my Caribbean culture, but now my American culture too. I wanted the same thing for her. And my daughter had, like, our family is very diverse and we're mixed race and whatnot. And so I wanted her to have all these different aspects and experiences and be proud of who she is. And even though we at home can teach our kids to be strong and to, like, be strong minded and know who they are and know their self and identity, as a child, it's hard to navigate that, right? Because you're young, you're all young, and you're just going through these waters. So I definitely understand what you meant by that. And I'm happy that you found your tribe when you got to the public school, because that, I'm sure, made an impactful, a positive impact on you. And you were, and like you said, you were able to then get back into your character. You didn't have to fight. You didn't have to go through that, like, survival mentality of fighting your way through and just have to be unkind to people, because now it's just like, no, they get me and I get them. And even if you didn't, you were able to talk, right?
Yeah.
I think, like, even to the question, like, I guess I should say, I wonder, like, because you're moving from one culture, like, coming from Nigeria is a culture shock. You're moving from one thing to another, and that other thing, you experience, like, two different versions of that other thing, but they kind of feed into one big monster that is the West. But would that even be, like, you know, something that affects your mental health? Like, coming from something that is more wholesome in a way, where you're with family, you're with people who speak like you, you're with people who practice the same culture, and then coming all the way across the waters to this land.
Yeah. I think I have two different answers for that. My first answer has to be, I always thought of, like, culture shock and, like, what it meant. And I kind of feel like I didn't really experience it, or I feel like I wasn't necessarily the one who experienced culture shock. I feel like people around me were culturally shocked by me. So I don't know if that makes sense, but I just felt like, because I was young and I was little, but everyone was the same to me and everyone meant the same thing to me. And I think I'm just, like, now, like, I'm just American as I am Nigerian. Like, I just assimilated myself into the culture. So I think the main problem was just seeing how other people see me and then thinking, oh, this is how I have to be, because if they see me this way, then I should be this way. Or, oh, I'm not American enough, so then I have to be this way. So maybe just, oh, I think beauty standards, like having to be, I can't be that because I'm Black. I have Black eyes, Black hair. But then people that were seen as pretty or perfect, no matter what, were the opposite of me. So I think the culture shock was just, like, me not being the way that I thought was good, and then can never be that way. So it was hard to accept it, but then I grew and, like, I learned to accept it now.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to take some of these questions. We're going to take these last couple minutes and we're going to try to hit up these questions because they're very good. So Master Mayulek says, the word strong reminds me of the concept of a governor in a mechanical engine. Mm-hmm. Thing about mechanical engines, but the governor seems to be a part. Among other things, the governor limits the top speed of vehicles to protect it from damage. Thank you. So then he goes on to say, strong not only advocates overriding one's governor, but discourages seeking out support while also promoting chronic singlehood. And I would agree, like, that's that wearing those hats that I'm going to be strong. I'm going to be like a man, and, like, a man doesn't want another man. Like a heterosexual straight man does not want another man, you know, like, cause that's what we become. We just become like men with dresses, with wigs on and hair. How does that make us different from other people? So it's like, they want that feminine, they want that vulnerability. Like, it's, at least that's what men tell us. Like, so we have to, like, listen to what that is and not override the thing that's supposed to keep us, like, you know, in place.
Can I tap into that real quick? Because, like I said, I had, due to my circumstances, I had to wear both sides, right? But I found that even in a past relationship, my most, which was over like 7 years long, I found that because I now know all of this stuff, like I have all this new knowledge and experience, I had to quote unquote fall back a little. So I was like, no, and I trusted this person. So I'm like, no, I want him to lead and I'm going to do that. And in the sense of unlearning certain things, like we talked about earlier in the conversation, I knew and I would say to myself, I have to change a few things because I don't have to be so strong anymore. I have a partner that is willing and wants to take some of this burden off of me or wants to help and uplift, right? To then find a little shortly thereafter, I found myself sometimes quieting myself a little so that he can feel emasculated, mm-hmm. right? And so I think in the times that, like, I think it's such like a, it's like a limbo space sometimes with women who have always had to wear those hats or always had to be the strong person, regardless if they're single or not, or if they're like just in a family dynamic where it makes them, where it puts them in a place to like grow up fast and carry the torch and make sure everybody's taken care of, advocate for everybody, regard, like, you know, whatever the situation is. And we grow and become women who are now from young, strong young girls to now strong young women to strong adult women. It's kind of like shaky waters sometimes, or funny, like the way how to navigate it, because I just found myself like, wait, why am I can't minimize who I am so you can feel big. Like I can't make myself small so you feel big. And I think sometimes like it's just tricky that when you are trying to get away from the masculinity and really embrace your feminism and your and, you know, just being a woman and giving the rest to your partner. You can do that, but you have to make sure that you're not making yourself small and losing who you are in the process, because then it's like, no, that's not really what we want, right? We want to honor our partner, honor our spouses, or the man who is in our life who is taking on the leadership role, but he has to also be equipped to do that. Just like we have to be equipped to be the feminine part, his feminine counterpart, and be able to do all the things that we're supposed to do. So I just wanted to like put that out there too, because that's something that I think women, like strong women, do face as well. It can get tricky when you're so, again, when you've had all these years to do it by yourself, and that's the only path you know, it can kind of be challenging at times, and you don't ever want to take away from who you are, but also you have to be open to giving some things up, but let it be in a healthy way, let it make sense, and let that, and make sure that that person is on the same page, like you're both on the same page, and that you're not feeding egos, right? Like we got to take away the ego and the power, that like the power ladder, or you know what I mean.
I think that, because I'm not gonna, okay, there's mad comments, but I think that that's exactly what is being said. Like, because because, and maybe this, we can continue this conversation, because again, this Black mental health is going to be like an ongoing conversation. So that maybe that's something to build on the next show. Like we can like put a pin in it and go further, because I think that idea of like, well, I have to minimize myself, that's still that holding on to like, well, I want to be this, some of it, right? Mm-hmm. But I think, yes, they both have to show like, I am a man, and then the other has to show, and we have to show I'm a woman. I think that we can't go into it with the idea of like, well, I don't want to minimize, because then if it doesn't allow for the full experience, and then are we really unlearning everything that we have to, if we still kind of have that voice in the back, like, don't minimize, because you may not be, like, who says it's minimizing? Like, who is the judge or the gauge for the minimization, you know? Like, who or what are we using? Mm-hmm. But, like, we can, like, definitely, like, dig.
Yeah, we should definitely, because I have a response to that, but I'll hold it.
Okay, so we'll put a pin in it. Yeah, we'll talk about that in the next show. So Sovereignty, well, Anu Radio says so many good points. Is there a way to change it pre-production? And I think that was to like talking about your daughter. And I think that is like kind of the mindset, like how you mm-hmm. were saying, Adobe, like it's how we move and how we live, because then that does change what we produce and what we produce mm-hmm. becomes better. Sovereignty says a large part of what is not imparted to our young women is the need to focus on family and the redemption that comes with it. She also says, yes, Anushka, teach her what you learned later in life. That's the gem, that trust in your mate to bring that strength. And she also says, and this was, I guess, to you, Adobe, every foreign student that ever went to a U.S. college, you are academically yeah. demoted, because she yeah. was a foreign student. Anu Radio says that makes perfect sense. There wasn't much room for vulnerability. Thank you for answering your question, the question about the mental health and coming from going and going from coming. House of Uya says, how does having the balance and being raised by a father and mother help young girls to develop and flourish in their adulthood? That's a really good question.
I like that question. And that is awesome. And can I say something real quick? I know I got a lot to say. My household, so like my parents were together, and then my dad came to the States and we were back home in Guyana. And then we came to America and then they were together. But then my dad was on and off, on and off. So the only stable parent I ever had was my mom. Mm-hmm. And they got divorced when I was a teenager, about like 17 years old. And that's a whole nother thing, because that caused some mental health issues and emotional issues that I didn't discover until later on in life. But mm-hmm. that's another one. But now, again, now I'm a parent, and in my early 30s, I realized that it's so imperative to have both parents, right? Because it is a drastic impact. And I appreciate the strictness of my dad now more than I did when I was younger. But I see how what he taught me and the boundaries he had and the standards he had, how that made me who I am. Same thing for my mom. She was softer and more vulnerable with us. I had more conversation with my mom, more understanding. She took a lot of pride in us, because she raised us primarily by herself, all, you know, two young girls in a new country, you know, by herself. So I think it was imperative, and the balance of having both parents is awesome, because everyone has their own perspective, right? So your dad is going to have his and your mom's going to have hers, but then they come together because of you, and they marry those beliefs and those systems so that they can raise you to the best of their ability. But as you get older, you learn to appreciate all of that, because it helps you navigate some waters. Even if you have to unlearn some things, that foundation that they lay, I think, is imperative. And not every family is perfect either. We have dysfunctional families or whatnot. But if it's healthy and loving, and you know, and it's for your best interest, overall interest, I think it's amazing, and it's great to have both parents in the house. Not necessarily in a household, but both parents to raise you, so you have both of them.
Right, because every family is different. Like some yes. are polygynous, where dad may not be in the right. house all the time, but there's that there, right?
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's also really important, because like my mom always says this quote, and it's like really common, but it's like two heads make the whole thing better, or two heads is better than one. But no matter, like, even if like you're working in a group project and you both like don't know what you're doing, or one person knows and the other person doesn't know, when you finish the project or when you finish whatever you're doing, you're gonna realize that you needed the other person, they needed you back. So being a parent and being a wife and a husband, it's a partnership, and the child is the outcome. So being able to be a production of a family who, whether or not like it's balanced or not, but you have a mom, you have a dad, but whether or not you have a close relationship with one or not, you're able to like see like what influences you have, like what, like, because you're part of them. So how did this person train you, and how did that make you who you are, and what did this person do, and how did that make you think the way you think? So it just helps to like, it just helps make your life more balanced and like give it an equal equilibrium. But if you do have one parent and that parent has to service both parents, then it also I mean, there is an imbalance there, but it's not an imbalance towards the child. Always sometimes an imbalance towards a single parent, because it's hard to navigate, and then you have to figure out, oh, what should I do? Like, how can I be the mom and the dad? And then, like, you feel like you're giving up part of yourself to, like, take care of your child. But I think that if, like, it's done well, then the single parent, like, becomes, like, both of the parents. And I think it's really amazing, but it definitely is easier and better and more balanced to have, like, two parents in the house for the mental health of, like, everyone.
Yeah. I gotta say, though, I think, oh gosh, I lost my whole train of thought, and it was really something I wanted to say to what Adobe has said. Oh, yes. I used to think when I was younger, when I was much younger, I can be both. I can be the mom and dad. Honestly, no, you can't. I can only be the mom. I can never be my daughter's dad, and he can never be her mother, because all I could do as a single parent was love her enough to be able to cover her for both of us when he couldn't, right? So I was able to cover me and him, so therefore my child was covered, but I could never be her dad, because I can't fill those shoes as, like, you know what I mean? And just like he can't be her mom. And I say that now more with more wisdom and more experience and more knowledge, and more of knowing me and who I am as a woman, but also as a parent. I could never be that. So that 20-year-old that was like, yeah, I'm her mom and her dad. No, I had it all wrong. I could never be that, right? I can just be thankful and thank God that he has given me enough to where I can cover my child on both of our ends until, you know, dad could do the same mentally, physically, emotionally, financially, so on and so forth.
Yeah. And this can also be the same, not only like in the aspect of mom and dad, but in the aspect of us as like individuals. Like, I can't, in college, I'm thinking, oh, I have to be independent. I have to be by myself. My parents are so many miles away. I have to be my own parent. Like, but it's not true. Like, I learned from first semester, I'm learning it right now too, that I can't be my own mentor. I can't be my own professor. I can't be my own friend. I can't be my own mom. I can't be my own dad. I have to, you know, even if the resource or the source is so far away, I have to remember to utilize that. I have to call them. I have to go ask dad for help, or like let dad, I don't ask him to yell me, but I have to let dad yell me, let dad get me back in place. Let dad ask me, how am I doing? And I have to let mom like ask me, how am I doing? Like, if I'm feeling okay. And instead of just saying I'm fine because it's a phone call and I don't feel like it's the same effect, we have to, like, college students, like, and people who are living far away from family or friends, they know, we have to be able to even use that phone call and be open. Because I don't know, like, I had this conversation with my mom over a short break, and I was talking to her more because there was more time. And then she texted me and she was like, I'm so proud of you. And I was like, why? I didn't even do anything right now. And she said, because I've seen how far you've come. And I feel like even if your parents or whoever you know that's in your life, mentor, whatever, is far away from you, allowing them, being vulnerable, and that's, being vulnerable means like being, the key is to have open communication and to have self-awareness. So if you can openly communicate with them, no matter how far away you are, they will be able to see how much you've grown. You will be able to see how much you've grown. And if you can be self-aware, like recognize that you have problems, instead of saying, oh, I'm fine, everything is fine, I'm happy, saying, oh, this is a problem and this is what I'm going through. Not even to find a solution, just to be aware of it. And it doesn't mean like you have to manifest a victim mindset. It just means you have to acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, like, about the victim mindset, like, it's not like healthy to have, because like just having that mindset alone lets your problem stay even like longer, and lets it last longer than it needs to. And I was talking to my friend, and she said something about how she has this manifestation mindset, and she learned about the lack mindset or the lack manifestation versus I called it the lack versus the abundance. So the lack mindset means, oh, you're thinking, oh, like, we're broke college students. We don't have enough money. Like, oh, I can't buy this, even though I need it. Like, I need this food. We don't have enough money. Versus the abundant mindset. Oh, I have enough money. I'm going to buy this because this is what I need right now. So having like mindset means that you're going to keep on living life the way that you think of it. If you think that you're lacking in life, you're going to live life the way you see it, as someone who lacks in life. If you think that you have enough in life, you are going to get more than what you need. The way you think, it's just the way we think what we're going to produce. So my solution to this is just to change our mindset. You're going to have issues and problems in our life, but if we have the strength to recognize it and to be willing to acknowledge it, then we would have the strength to solve it one by one.
Absolutely. I so agree with that. Mindset is everything. You change your mindset, you change the trajectory of your life.
Yeah. I had a thought and I just lost it. But I think you spoke on it, like, you know, so you said like two heads are better than one, and like I would even say, like, in the words of Chief Yuya, four hands are better than two, you know, when it comes to the father and the mother. And I also, like, I had the experience of growing up in a two-parent household, and then my parents got divorced, and then it was a single-parent household. And now, looking back as an adult, I can see where the mistakes were. And sometimes it pains, like, saying, like, your parents made mistakes, but at the end of the day, like, they're humans, too, and they're going to make mistakes. And so then if we see that, that's where, like, the unlearning comes in and says, I have to change it. I have to fix it. And then that's also the mindset. And then, you know, which I'm coming to understand, some things may never be fixed. Yet, I'll go back to something that you said in this, but like that is that faith. You know, I have faith. And it's just like, if I'm still here, there's an opportunity to try to keep fixing it. It could be something that I'm never going to fix. But then there's always that day, keep working on it.
You know? What is a will is a way. Yeah. And if it's meant to, and if God wants you to find a way, you're gonna find a way. That's just how I see it.
Right. I do think, like, that's if we're moving in His will, not our own. You know, mm-hmm. it has to
right.
be
our, right. You have to be obedient and patient, silent still sometimes.
Yes. There was another piece. I know what it was, but I think this is gonna have, because I know we're like pressed for time. I want to be respectful of everybody's time. There was another piece that we probably put a pin in it, and we're going to continue this for the next one. And it was the, you know, it kind of went with the question that House of Yuya asked about the mother and the father. And it's that idea of, like, partnership. And it's like, yeah, we're here together. Like, I agree. Like, we're not meant to be alone. Like, that's what scripture tells us. For those of us who follow scripture, you know, and if you don't, then that, you know, that's fine. That's on you. But for those of us who do, yes, we're not meant to be alone. We were told be fruitful and multiply. But then there's that piece that I do think that I don't know if the word is, if we kind of get it wrong. And I think that is, like, the world, like, in being that strong woman and that world kind of, that's that piece that won't let go, because it's not really a partnership. If we follow, like, we're not supposed to be alone and we were made for one another, we go back and we see that Eve, or Hawa, was made to be a helpmeet. She was not made to be equal. She was made to be a helpmeet. And I think that's the piece that we kind of lose all the time. But we will talk about that, because I know, like, that's a real deep part that a lot of times kind of, like, it gets uncomfortable. But, you know, I do think that is a piece that kind of it moves into the mental health of Black women, and, like, how we move and, like, what we want to accept versus what we don't accept, and what we know and versus what we don't know, and, you know, and the list goes on and on. Mm-hmm. So we'll definitely put a pin in that. And I'm gonna just go through the last of these comments. Sovereignty says, she says, this is making me think of an amazing series that Chief Yuya is leading right now on the science of righteous family. It digs into the impact of family and how it forms our behavior and mindset. So for those of you who are listening, and those of you who are watching, and also, like, Adobe and Anishka, like, you know, you can head on over to the Anu Life Global Ministries YouTube channel and check out the series. There are two videos right now that's on it, and it's about the righteous family. And while we're at it, you're welcome. House of Yuya says thank you. For answering the questions, ladies. And also Anushka on the radio says, thank you for clarifying that. I think that was when you said you could not ever be the father.
Right.
I think that's what you put that in. I'm trying to keep, because we late on the conversation.
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep
the good conversations.
Yeah.
Great topic.
Yes. So I did want to share, like, just some, a message from our sponsors. For those of you who are following us, you know, make sure you like, share, subscribe. If you're enjoying the conversation, if it's interesting to you, make sure you like, share, and subscribe this podcast, whether you're listening on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or you're watching us on YouTube. Like, share, and subscribe. I would also invite you to like, share, and subscribe to our other partner channels and channels related. There is Matt Domenulek. I don't think that he started his art back up again, but he was in the chat, but then he wasn't, so I'm not sure if art started, which is why I try to, like, move along because it starts at 9. But if you are interested in art, you can definitely visit Matt Domenulek it's Matt Domenulek Art on the radio. You can put it in the chat because I don't want to butcher it. On Instagram, he does commissions, as well as Margie Marie Art Online, who also does commissions. And these are members of my community, and they also provide, like, really, really gorgeous artwork for commission. So that's for those of you who are listening. You can find them on IG, Instagram. You can find them on Instagram and TikTok. There's also, make sure that you visit the True Health Live podcast page and also DivaSully.com. Download your free copy of the 10 Points in Public Health, and you'll get that for free, $5.99. And it goes through a lot of different, 10 different examples of public health in our lifetime. So with that, I'm so grateful. Like, thank you so much, Adobe and Anishka. Like, this was a really good and interesting conversation. Like, I think the goal for season 4 is to make it, you know, more like hard hitting. We're gonna toe the line a little bit more because we still have fun. You know, we want to have fun, but also like hit like some of the very uncomfortable topics as well, and just kind of speak on them and get them out there. Yeah. So, thank you so much, and I know like you were nervous, but
one more question. Like,
well, thank you so much for having me.
You are so welcome. I am so glad that you.
There's a question.
Yeah. One more question. Are there any upcoming health initiatives that you are a part of, Adobe, that we can support?
Right now, like, not really. I am working with YAFE, with the Red Wrap organization, and it's a Ministerial Health Product Initiative. So we would like support for that. My job is to, like, find shelters and also get more period stories. And also, I would also like to make it a bigger initiative. So, like, I think that's what we're working on. But we want to focus on the triangle area from our last conversation. And she also, like, is willing for me to, like, bring it to UNC. So, for UNC, I think I would like to get more, like, period stories around. Like, I already asked, like, a couple of my friends. And also, like, maybe do, like, a ministerial product drive. So, that's what I want to do. And also, I was, like, thinking back from high school and, like, what I wanted to do. And I remember that I would also like to be, like, involved in research. I think some of you guys know what, like, sickle cell is, but I'm, like, I am a carrier for it. So I wanted to, like, know more about it. Mm-hmm. And, like, in my scholarship award, I think I said something about how I wanted to find a cure for sickle cell. It was a big dream, but I go to a research university, so I just want to be more involved in research. So if anyone's involved in research and wants me to be a part of it, I will be willing to. Or if anyone just, like, needs help or any volunteers or have any internships, I'll be willing to, yeah. anything good for the community, anything good for the public health, yeah.
Thank you for joining us here at True Health Live. Remember to like, save, share, and subscribe. Leave a comment and send an email if there's a topic if you want to discuss. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at True Health Live. You can also listen on DeidreSully.com. If there's a topic you'd like to discuss or hear, you can send an email to truehealthlive@gmail.com. See you next time.